Yes, y'all. It don't stop. JB, Madeline Carita is a show stop.
Wait, are we already recording?
Queen of Thorns, aka the Queen of Shade, because that old lady was lit on Game of Thrones. Rest in peace to her, condolences to her family. She played Olenna Tyrell on Game of Thrones.
Yeah. I mean, she was in. I mean, let's think about it. She had one of the most epic lines. She had one of the most epic careers. And I mean, when she was on the Avengers, like she was the cat's meow back in the day. She was that bitch. She was the 60s or 70s when it came out. She was the Cardi B back in the day.
Oh,
She
yeah,
had
absolutely.
that. She had the British WAP. So she had the British WAP from the mod British WAP. She had the old school British WAP. She had that vintage WAP.
Vintage.
You know, it's a good year. It's a very fine year. It's like a fine wine. She had
It's
that vintage
fine
wine.
wine. Another one gone in a continual string of losses this year. Daisy Ridley spoke on Star Wars this week. Another one of her co-star, another one of the Star Wars people speaking out in recent times. She said basically that Rey was originally toyed with the idea of being a Kenobi.
Tell Cersei's it was me.
And that ultimately, that unlike all of her other, some of her other co-stars, she said never say never to a possible return to the franchise in the future. This kind of goes back to what I said last week, idea where they were going with this, and that's why it suffered, and that's why it didn't get the reception that they were hoping for.
I mean, Star Trek Forever. Star Trek Forever. No, I mean, Star Wars is cool. I mean, I became a fencer in martial arts and all that stuff because of shows like Star, you know, like Star Wars, things like that. You know, I mean, I went full nerd, and you know, you never go full nerd, but
Never go full
you never go full nerd.
nerd.
Star Wars is it's been dragging its ass for a while. Like, I'm just at the point now where I'm like, take a break, y'all. We got it. We got it. We got it. Take a break, y'all.
I mean, it's got some good stuff going on with the franchise still. It's just when it comes to the franchise with these movies, especially like Star Wars, I say this, and I've said this before. And if you read my Rise of Skywalker review on Facebook last year when it came out, nobody hates Star Wars more than a Star Wars fan.
True,
The
true.
Star Wars fan base is one of the most hypercritical of any fan base in the world.
Toxic. No.
Super
Hypercritical.
toxic.
No. These motherfuckers are toxic. It is one of the most toxic fan bases in the world. I don't know which is more toxic. Like, I love Rick and Morty, so I know that I'm part of a toxic fan base, but Star Wars is actually more toxic than the Rick and Morty fan base. Like,
Oh yeah,
I don't
by
even know how that's possible.
Oh yeah, that's. I mean, when you talk about like big franchises that have like big fan bases, you're usually 9 times out of 10 toxic. Like, I'm a wrestling fan. Those moms are toxic.
I don't, you know what? I have met Triple H. I have met Tiny Lister. I have met, which is also Debo. That's my mama. That's my grandmama chain, Debo.
This
My grandmama gave
blood
it to me. You
bite.
got it. But yeah, and I've met, you know, I've met a lot of, I've met John Cena. I've met a
How'd you see
lot
him?
of, I was that girl who was just like, hey, guys. What's up with the wrestling? Even though I don't know anything about wrestling.
Oh, Madeline, that was a
I know.
joke.
No.
Johnson can't see him. Come on. You
I don't know
can't
anything about wrestling. I just sat here for three for you know, 57 million, 57, 11 million years. And strangely, when they're not wrestling, they don't talk about wrestling. So I didn't ask him about wrestling.
Man.
I don't
All
want to be a
right.
person. I don't want to be that. Like, who the hell wants to talk about their job on their day off, even if you're a wrestler?
Mean, true. Well, some of them are just like some of them are just fans. It's not just a job to them. It's more than a lifestyle. They're fans. Like, they're fans of each other.
Yeah, but when they're sitting at the crib, or they sitting at, you know, or they're sitting at a restaurant drinking their drink, they're not gonna want to be like, oh man, that one time. They're like, nah, chill, motherfucker. I'm trying to enjoy my dinner with my family. Like, let me be all up in your business, especially when I'm like, I don't know anything about wrestling.
Black-ish has announced another spinoff. It's going to be Old-ish, starring Lawrence Fishburne and Jennifer Lewis. Wow, did I just screw her for a name?
You know what? I
I
never
feel
realized
some.
that Lawrence Fishburne was married to the chick from Firefly.
Yeah, for a
I didn't
long
real
time.
well he was married. I mean, she did do him dirty, but I
Yeah,
never
but for a long time.
realized it.
Yeah, so yeah, for a long time.
Oh yeah. Man, have you seen their daughter, the one that did the porn? It was like Morpheus with boobs. And I was like, man, I wish I had never come here.
Wow.
I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. When you saw it, I was just like, wow. Wow, she ain't look nothing like her mom. Nothing. I was just like, wow,
A
Lawrence.
second, that was Gina Torres's daughter than Girl in the Porno? No.
Yep.
I didn't. Oh, no, that's Tanya. I thought it was from his previous marriage.
No, that's them. That's them. Man, she
Oh,
ain't get
man.
none of her mama's looks. I was like, damn, son, you got
Gina
all
Torres.
Lawrence.
Gina Torres is still fine.
I know she has a show where she plays a lawyer, I think, on like I don't know,
Yeah.
you know,
USA.
US. Yeah, you but you know what? USA Network be turning out some baddies though. When we put it like this, when other stations pick out black chicks, they be like all Candace Owens. And when UP and when USA Network pick out, it be the finest chicks ever. Like they had princesses, Gina Torres. Like, come on, man.
Gina been fine since Firefly.
She been fine
You
forever. I'm sure she came out
right.
like that.
She probably did.
I mean, I'm
But
sure she's been fine forever. I bet her high school picture's fine too.
Madden 21 came out last month, and in a recent update, they put Colin Kaepernick back in the game after 4 years of him not being in it.
I don't know. I know some people feel like Colin Kaepernick should be back in the NFL, but yo, fuck the NFL.
So you could actually get Madden right now, and you can start your franchise and play with Colin Kaepernick today. Cap being back in the game, he should have never really been taken out. He should be in the league. I've seen numerous quarterbacks of a lower caliber get jobs and chances repeatedly in over these last 4 years. Like guys who had no business getting opportunities and jobs. And there's no way that you can't tell me that Colin Kaepernick isn't one of the 32 best quarterbacks in the league still, after even after all this time. Because let's face it, even all 32 starting quarterbacks, all these franchise those franchises are not satisfied with their guys. They will be switching throughout the year. And Colin Kaepernick deserves an opportunity. I'm not sure if he'll get that, but him being back in the video game is a good first step.
Don't know. I really don't want him to be back in the NFL because I feel like he has a higher purpose than being a punching bag. Because we can't ignore that the NFL has a problem with concussions. People leave that field paralyzed. Like, we need to talk about, like, I don't want Colin Kaepernick to go back. I want him to run for a political office.
Oh, I definitely agree. I mean, he could do both. Cap, if Cap wants to play, that's where his passion is, where his heart is playing still. I mean, football is one of those things you can only do it while you're young. And 4 years out of the game, he's had 4 years to recover, 4 years to build up his strength. And yeah, I want to see him. I want to see him if a team is willing to get him an opportunity to play. But if he didn't play at this point, he didn't get an opportunity, then it's like it kind of is what it is.
I mean, I would rather have him go for a political office. Would like him to stop trying for the NFL and go do something like, I don't know, run for office, become part of a city council, like get into politics. We don't, you know, there's not much representation in general of people who have his mindset and also, you know, his level of heart, in politics. Like, we need people like him in offices higher than being in football. And I know some people are going to be mad because they live and breathe football, but football doesn't take you anywhere. There's lots of broke football players and there's lots of broke legends. There's lots of people, you know, we can talk about OJ. Like, yo, football is not a guarantee that you're going to live a great life forever.
I mean, that's true, but these days they do take the opportunity to teach these players and give them an education that there is life after football, that you can invest, that you can do more. You see that with a lot of players these days, like especially guys like Marshawn Lynch, who's even said that he doesn't even touch his game checks money. Like the only money he's been living off of most of this time is his endorsement money. Like he's building schools and stuff in other countries and he's just kind of just been chilling. Like these NFL players, well, the NFL, the league these days, takes the opportunity to educate these players, not just on but also in terms of taking care of your body as well. So they're doing a lot more these days to do that because, you know, who wants to get sued? All right. And speaking of video games, the movie's 10-year anniversary was earlier this, what was it, last month, I believe.
It was, and I started a huge fight on my Facebook page about it.
I love Scott Pilgrim versus the World. I love the comic book more than the game. I never really got a chance to really play the game like that way back in the day, but I did read the comic. Scott Pilgrim was a jerk, but he turned it
That's
around
exactly my
everything.
point, right? That's
Yeah.
exactly my point. Like, I wanted to love that movie because that movie is exactly my aesthetic, and I have a million evil exes. Like, that movie is exactly my aesthetic. I have so many evil exes. I have probably about, man, at least eight of them
Yeah.
are super evil.
Jesus. And Breath of the Wild is getting a prequel, Hyrule Warriors: Age of Calamity. That too, all three will be on the Switch, including Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Switch making moves. Nintendo's making moves, and I would expect that from them because they make good games. I have a Switch, I enjoy it. I definitely will be getting all three of those.
Nice.
Wonder Woman 1984 was supposed to come out in November, but it got pushed back again, and now it's not coming out till Christmas Day.
Wah,
I made it clear how I feel about DC movies. I feel like they have no real heart behind them, but this one I feel like could do it because the first Wonder Woman to me was three-fourths good. It was good up until that last arc, and then it just kind of just fell apart at the seams. But I'm curious to see how this turns out, especially with Chris Pine coming back and the main villain, one of the main villains at least being Cheetah, one of Wonder Woman's most prominent enemies. So just seeing how Cheetah and Chris Pine come into this, I'm curious. I'll definitely be there to check it out Christmas Day. I'll definitely review it and I'll take to YouTube with it, shameless plug, JB versus the World. And I will be there for it. How about you? Sounds like you're in the pack.
I don't know, 'cause they should have casted me as Cheetah. Up, I don't know if I can support that. I don't know if I can support me not being casted as Cheetah.
Did you say
Hold up.
something? You stepped to Patty Jenkins?
You know what? I try to. I've been trying to spit my game and shoot my shot.
Patty, you done messed up.
Yep, she didn't fuck the game up. So, you know,
Completely.
her bad, her bad.
Her bad.
Now y'all don't get to see me and my cheetah cheeks on fleek.
So, no CG Madeline. Twerking a
I
golden wind, fighting Wonder Woman. We're not gonna see
You know what? And you're missing out.
it. Wonder Woman may win the fight at the move at the end, but we've all lost. All right. So in X-Men news, Kitty Pryde is now officially confirmed to be a member of the LGBT community in the latest issue of Marauders. Kitty recently died and was resurrected, and one of the first things that she did was get her first tattoo and smooch with Ileana Rasputin, aka Magic. After years and years of speculation but never confirmation, we now know that Kitty is LGBT.
Wow, wasn't she played by Ellen Page?
She was in the movies.
Well, duh.
Well, that was long before Ellen came out.
Man.
That was before Juno.
Yo, my gaydar is high key. I knew it and I knew it and I knew it.
Look
I remember when she came out and I was just like, girl, come on, man.
like, who was
Come
you
on,
hiding it from?
man.
Who was she hiding it from?
Yeah. It didn't take a
Oh,
flashlight. It didn't take it. I didn't, you know what? It was like having a flashlight in the daylight, in the daytime. Like, if you couldn't, and Stevie Wonder could see that.
right.
Ray Charles could have saw that.
Kitty is my favorite X-Men. See, unlike what they did with Iceman, because Iceman, when they turned Iceman gay, there was no indication that Iceman was gay ever. Because he was a womanizer. He had like the ultimate hard on for Polaris, has had like all these like girlfriends, including Kitty, over the last like well, the entire history of his character. So them turning him gay was like, dude, what the hell? But this one, it's kind of been ambiguous the entire time, even though she dated Colossus, even though Colossus was like a grown man and she was a teenager. But we're not gonna talk about that. And even though she just was engaged to Star Lord and was temporarily Star Lord in Peter Quill's absence, and has had a relationship with Spider-Man in an alternate timeline, the Ultimate Universe. But Kitty has never actually been involved with a woman or done anything that indicated that she was. But that it was hints there. There was always the seeds there, and if you know me, I like my seeds. So the seeds have been planted for a long time. So them actually just going down and doing it, fine, whatever, cool, no issue for me. Kitty Pride, I'm glad you're out of the closet. All
Welcome out, girl. Welcome out. Hello to the team. Say hello to the team. I play for both sides, so I'm good. I ain't got no
All
title.
right. WandaVision and the Falcon and the Winter Soldier both resumed shooting last week. Timetable yet for when they'll be finished and when they'll be released, but it's good that they're back to shooting because I cannot wait to see them when they drop.
I'm ready for it. I'm ready. My body is ready.
Falcon and the Winter Soldier, that's probably like my most anticipated one because I'm so happy that they're going with Black Captain America, with Captain Falcon, with Sam Wilson. So I am so ready for that.
And Mackie, is that what his name is? Mackie?
Anthony Mackie, Papa Doc.
Man, did you catch his I mean, I don't know, but you know what? I like your everybody just focuses on him as Captain America, but yo, come on. Black Mirror, yo.
I did not watch Black Mirror. I'm aware of that episode.
Not as bad as people made it out to be. However, there is a kissing scene like that, it's a lot, but I mean, I'm down with it. I was about that life. I can handle it.
I have no issue with it. It's just like, I just for me, I just didn't see it on the overall.
Was actually a pretty cool episode. It was it actually had some of his co-stars from other films. Like it had the chick from that played the Bug Lady on what's it called? The movie with Star-Lord. I should know this movie. I've watched this movie so many freaking times.
Guardians.
Yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy. So they had the chick that was the bug lady from that. It had the
Parfumette.
dude from Tenet.
October 30th on Disney Plus, we're getting The Mandalorian Season 2. Finally. So looking forward to that. We talked about Star Wars a little bit earlier in this episode. The Mandalorian is one of those good things that Star Wars does these days. And Sasha Banks is going to be in Season 2. Y'all, I can't wait to see it.
Can't wait.
Walking Dead is ending this season. It's got spin-offs planned. But after 11 seasons, it's finally over. I cannot stress enough how happy I am that this dumpster fire is finally over. I'm so sick of The Walking Dead.
You know what? Yeah, The Walking Dead, when it first came out, though, like, we can't deny that The Walking Dead was like iconic. It was freaking iconic. I had a friend that was the black dude that died in the prison. I'm trying to remember his name right now, and I remember talking to him about that, and he's like, "Yeah, I just got this role." And by the time I saw it, he was already dead.
See, The Walking Dead, like, it just started off with so much promise, same with the comic book, but it's like after so long, it's like, okay, well, what's the point? You're dealing with cut threat after threat after threat, but there's no end game. There's no main objective that the characters are trying to achieve besides living, but living comes with a new veritable threat. So what now? And the TV show reached that in because it just also just kind of just got monotonous. Like, okay, what are we doing this for?
I mean, when it first came out, we were what it came out not too long after films like 28 Days Later, and
Yeah.
it was in the and it came out in the middle of the whole like zombie the rage zombie fast zombie zombie world like
The comic
invasion.
book was like hot fire.
Yeah, the comic book was hot fire, like, but I mean, The Walking Dead came out at the time when the zombie craze was at its all-time high, and now we actually live in that world. So,
That's a fact.
it kind of lost its luster when I see, when I'm walking around and I'm just like, wow, huh, that became way too real. You know what? I think the show died when Everybody Loves Chris died on it. Not joking.
Wow.
Oh, you know what? I have to say one thing for that show. is
What's
that,
that?
yo, I'm not usually attracted to swamp trash, but Daryl Dixon, wow.
Norman Reedus, yeah.
It woke up my, it, you know what? I'm not a person that normally would have a redneck fantasy, but that happened with that situation. I was like, he probably smells terrible, but I'm with it.
He was like, Daryl wasn't even an original character in the comic book. That was strictly for the TV show.
Fine
And he's
with
supposed to be
that.
one-off. He was supposed to be a one-off and ended up sticking around.
Well, he's also a really good actor. Like him and he's in so many good movies though. And like low key, like first of all, he's the person that did my boy Blade dirty. Don't forget that he did Blade dirty.
Yeah, he was Scud. That was his name, Scud or something like that.
Yeah, he was Scud. He was also not Reservoir Dogs, but
He was in the Boondock Saints. Is that
yeah,
what you're
that's
thinking
what I
of?
mean. Okay, Boondock Saints. Yes, that's the movie. That's the movie, Boondock Saints. He was in Boondock Saints, and that's like a classic film. Like, he's never gonna not be famous. He's never gonna not eat.
Absolutely. And he's got video game credits and all kinds of stuff. He's good. He's 51 now.
Wow. I mean, you
51.
know what? Money don't crack. When you got money, you don't crack.
Seems to be the lesson of the day, kids. If you get money, you don't age. On the
Truth.
outside, it hasn't been renewed yet, but the budget for it will be dependent on the allowance from HBO Max, which apparently will get it. Unlike Doom Patrol and Young Justice, that are both renewed for season 3 and season 4, respectively, season 4 of Young Justice will be called Phantoms. Doom Patrol is really, really good. Young Justice is one of my favorite. It is my favorite Western animated show now. Sorry, Rick and Morty. It's all about Young Justice to me. Harley Quinn season 2 was really good. Season 1, I reviewed it on YouTube. Go check it out. It's also a really good show. So, HBO Max still cleaning up, getting that DC content. Let's hope that they get season 3 done for Harley Quinn because it ended with the Poison Ivy Harley Quinn relationship coming to fruition.
It's been
Hopefully.
time. It's been time.
And they kind of just, that was what they were building up to the entire season. And it's in comics, so it's like, whatever. Like I said, Doom Patrol, really good. Haven't finished season 2 yet, so got to get through that. But Doom Patrol, also very good. Young Justice is just great. Season 3 was a little bit of a drop off compared to the quality that we usually get, but them being moved to DC Universe and now on HBO Max, they're able to do a little bit more adult things like cursing and blood and allusions to sex and et cetera, like they're doing more. So I'm looking forward to see what they do with season 4.
Not for children.
Definitely not for children.
Definitely not for children. Thank God. I mean, I understand people who like have kids, love it when they make things for kids, but I ain't got no kids. I ain't worried about what your crotch goblins watch. Most adult stuff.
Crumb snatches.
Crumb snatchers, crotch goblins, whatever you want to call them. I mean, I might have one day, but it not today.
All right, moving on. We got confirmation that Fast 9 is more than likely gonna end up in space. And you know what? Whatever. I'm so done with that franchise. I'm so over them. I'm done with it. Done with it, Madeline. Can't do it no more. I can't stand it.
Walk away, walk away.
What's left for them to do?
Walk away.
What's really left for them to do? They have cars taking on airplanes and tanks and building hopping and defying gravity and taking out whole parking structures and world longest like runways. What's left for them to do except space?
I
I'm
mean,
glad.
Jason and Freddy have been to space, and even Leprechaun. It's time that they go.
And you
Like,
know what?
imagine that Leprechaun got to space before you, slipping. They slipping.
And you know what? When Leprechaun was in the toilet when they went to space, and now the Fast franchise is sharing that same toilet, spinning on the opposite side of the bowl.
You know
Go to
what? I'm
space.
always gonna love the
Don't
Fast
care.
franchise. I'm always gonna love the Fast franchise. I
I'm
remember
so
going to
hurt.
the movie theater and watching Fast and Furious 2 with your boy Bow Wow.
Was Tokyo Drift. That was 3.
Oh, was it three?
Yeah.
Dang.
What's
They
DK
have
stand for?
so many.
Donkey
There are
Kong.
so many of those right now. Like, I mean, who else is left to add? And I mean, when Paul Walker left, they
They're
made
adding
it.
John Cena.
What'd you
They're
say?
adding John Cena. They're
It's
adding John
time.
Cena.
Of course, they're adding John Cena. Every big man in the world is gonna have to be in that eventually. And Tyrese.
And John Cena is Vin Diesel's brother, the brother.
Why we keep pretending that Vin Diesel's not black? Are we still doing that? Are we still
The
pretending that he
brother.
ain't black no more?
He's the brother that apparently left the family because he couldn't measure up to his brother Dom. Now let me get this straight. You're trying to tell me that you can't measure up to your brother. Your brother, who was a street racer, who was arrested, you couldn't measure up to that, so you went off to the military and became less like some sort of superhero?
I
Now,
mean,
I mean, shut up, man.
okay, so let's begin at the fact that they are two different races of people.
Well, yeah, we can start there.
I mean, you can start there when you like, you know, suspension of disbelief. The Rock and John Cena are different races. So, I mean, what are we gonna have? I mean, are they gonna have a conversation about Homeboy's mom then? Like,
Oh no, but Vin Diesel plays Dominic Toretto, who is not black.
we need to stop that though. I'm so tired of watching, like, I mean, granted, you know, we have things like The Little Mermaid and that, but I'm so tired of taking biracial people and making them not black, making them white characters. I mean, for all intents and purposes, like, that's kind of, I wish that would die. I wish that would become played out because that's just kind of bothersome. I was like, why can't he just play a black, be a black, you know, be a biracial man? Playing a biracial man. But we can talk, we ain't gonna talk about that though. That's a whole nother episode for a
That's a
whole different
whole
time.
nother thing. But as he was saying, salute me, familiar. I hate that franchise. Anyway,
And
speaking of
also
franchise,
John Cena doesn't, John Cena looks nothing like an Italian person.
nothing.
Nothing. Like, how are they gonna pull that off? Are they gonna die? Are they gonna get into some appropriation? Please don't.
Please don't.
Please don't get into that after Luda was there.
He's still there. And Nathalie Emmanuel, too, her fine self.
She
Anyway,
definitely is
man,
definitely living there.
speaking of much maligned franchises, Mulan is the lowest rated Disney remake so far, and it ain't doing so well in China. It's only reportedly made somewhere between 20 and 25 million overseas.
I mean, but it's problematic though. That's the problem. Like, we're hitting a point where like that whole like problematic used to work a lot better. Like, you know, for a while Kanye was working the problematic angle. You know, when Donald Trump was in his like fucking heyday not too long ago, he was working the problematic angle. I think now we're moving out of the problematic marketing angle. Like, we're no longer interested in watching problematic films because everything else in the in our worlds are problematic right now. It was just
I mean,
problematic, and there's a reason why that's happening. We're just not, you know, there's things that they're no longer supporting.
yeah, it's not doing so well either, but I mean, that was to be expected. I didn't expect it to like to not go over so well in China either, especially with them taking a lot after the original ballad as opposed to the original Disney movie. It kind of makes it, but whatever. Disney remakes are nostalgic cash grabs anyway. They're mostly soulless, and this one was really not too much of an exception. So I'm okay with that. But franchise that does have hearts. Marvel will be able to reboot both Luke Cage and Iron Fist next month. So
I mean, are we gonna have the same actors?
if Mike Coulter and Finn Jones were open to it, their schedules cleared up, they actually could return to their roles. Everybody in the Netflix part of the MCU has expressed interest in returning, especially Kristen Ritter and my man who played Daredevil. His name escapes me at the moment. He has been like the biggest one, especially him trying to come through for Spider-Man 3, which won't start filming until 2021. But yeah. Luke Cage, Iron Fist, able to come back to the MCU. They could actually do some different things with that, especially, with Iron Fist and everybody else coming through. with the Avengers, there's a whole Avengers void now. So we could actually do something like that. Speaking of Avengers, Chris Hemsworth said that he isn't leaving the MCU anytime soon, and Love and Thunder won't be his last appearance. So glad for that, because Chris Hemsworth's Thor is one of my favorite characters. He's my second favorite Avenger. As far as Love and Thunder is concerned, they are going to bring back Jane Foster, and I think the idea is for them to do Lady Thor with her, and also Valkyrie searching for a queen, so romance in the MCU.
Tessa Thompson.
I'm not sure how all three of those storylines are going to intersect, but we're going to find out Love and Thunder when it comes out next year.
We'll definitely see.
All right, so the Flash movie got some news dropped last week. It's pretty much all this point to it's pretty much all but confirmed at this point for it to be a Flashpoint movie. And for those who are unfamiliar with the Flashpoint storyline, that's basically what happened in DC, where Flash altered the storyline and basically caused a giant reset of the DC universe. So basically, we could have a giant reset for DC movies, only for us to rebuild and maybe have like a unified vision for it. So maybe Warner Brothers got somebody that cares about the characters, that has a vision for them and can do all the characters justice, but it starts with this Flash movie.
I mean, I definitely think that it's time. I don't know if it's time for a Flash movie, but I like the character, the guy who plays the Flash on the TV show. I think he's a really fun take on it.
Greg Gustin. Yeah, but this is gonna be Ezra Miller. Ezra Miller, I didn't like his take on the Flash.
I don't know. I kind of liked his take on the Flash, but I think it's because I have a friend that looks like him, so I was automatically like, "Hey, buddy."
See, Ezra is supposed to be Barry, and his take on it was like everything opposite of Barry. Barry's confident. Barry is they're both smart, but Barry uses intelligence. I mean, he's a forensic scientist. Barry wasn't a fanboy. Barry was just a good guy, and he's just real chill. And Ezra's version of the Flash, well, one, he wasn't blonde. He was black-haired, and Barry's always been a blonde. Now, not that I normally care about these things, but historic comic book characters, I think accuracy matters. So him not being blonde kind of irked me a little bit. But then how he was kind of like the fanboy and kind of like inexperienced and immature, I wasn't really a fan of his take.
Wait, hold up. Accuracy matters, man. They've been making Storm the lightest of the lightest black women they can possibly find forever.
Oh, and I agree with you on that. They did Storm dirty every time they've casted her.
Well, yeah, it's always just like, I was like, I love me some Holly Berry, but Holly Berry is a 5'4", light skin, tiny nosed, like she's kind of like just a brown white woman. So it's like she does not look like Storm, nor did I ever feel like she was a good Storm, even though I love me some Holly Berry. I do. I just don't think that she should have ever been Storm. And the other one, I think the one Blankenship? She shouldn't have, you know, when people asked her about it, she got really defensive, and that kind of like wrapped up her career.
Yeah, people attacked her though. They got after her really hard.
They did, but I mean, as a celebrity taking on that character, she just kind of have to eat it. You still getting paid millions of dollars. You still getting paid millions of dollars. And yes, I do understand that, like, we go way too hard on celebrities sometimes. But girl, you got $20 million. Put that money over your ears and let him talk.
Genius.
Because her response. Yeah, well, I mean, I'll put it like this, though. Her response and being on that pedestal means that when you react angrily, you're going to have the ripples to your career can be more impactful. Like, who cares what somebody who works at Taco Bell says when you got that kind of money? But your response, you're held to a higher standard.
Agreed.
Celebrities are held to a higher standard, and it may not be fair, but they make an awful lot of money to be held to that higher standard.
But they're not immune to not being offended by disrespect.
Truth. But you could also just turn it off. You know, the chick from Star Wars, she turned off her social media. Because, I mean, we haven't really seen that actress since she, you know, since that occurrence. And also, there's a way to handle it, especially when you're dealing with colorism. Like, there's a way to handle it. Like, I feel like it's not her that failed. I feel like her PR and her public relations team failed because they should have expected that there would be some level of people questioning why somebody who is obviously not African and African American, like the character herself, would be casted for that. That is something that she should have been prepared for by her handlers. That's something that she should have had media training for, because that would have been something that comes up, and that's something that would have been apparent if their media, if her media handlers had actually done their job.
Well, I will say this. That was only at the time her third role in a movie. And she does have other projects that are coming. She's had two movies come out this year. She's got three more movies that are to be announced, but two of them are done. One of them is still filming. So, I mean, she's still got some work, and she's young. She's only 29. She's just a new 29. So she's got some time.
She do. We may forget. Just don't take any more roles like that.
But we'll see what happens with Storm, because Storm is a whiles away anyway. For my wrestling fans out there, it's time for me to get to y'all. Time for some wrestling news. All right, so last week, WWE reportedly released 60 people, including mostly backstage personnel, including Mike Rotunda, who was the father of the real life father of Bray Wyatt and Bo Dallas. They released Gerald Briscoe, who's been with the company longer than we've been alive. He got hired with the company, I believe it was 1984. And is fired now from WWE. Everybody, well, for the most part, people who were released, they're furloughed, so they're not just out in the cold just yet. And some of them have been told that when this whole pandemic thing is over with, they'll be brought back. But right now, WWE just trying to save some money. Yeah.
Yep. Oh, well. Once again, I don't know anything about wrestling, so I'm just gonna sit out and talk about it, let you parlay that information with the homies.
All right. So Simone Johnson, daughter of The Rock, the Dwayne Johnson, is undergoing knee surgery. This will be her third knee surgery, her first since she's been with the company. I'm not sure what the problem is with her knee exactly, that she her knees that's been going on. She does her third surgery, but wish her a speedy recovery. Hope she does well. And as she said on Twitter, suggest some tweeter. Suggest some scary movies, some video games she's getting into while she's recovering. So yeah, get better, Simone. Sasha Banks is advertised for this week's SmackDown after being attacked by her former best friend Bayley a couple weeks ago on SmackDown. Talked about that last week. I think it's a little bit too soon for Sasha to be back on TV after an attack like that. I feel like they need to drag this out for a little bit more to sell this, because I feel like the Sasha Bayley rivalry is WrestleMania worthy, and I feel like that's where we need to conclude it if we're going to conclude it at all. Speaking of SmackDown had the highest ratings in months last week. A lot of this could be attributed to Roman Reigns' return, the Universal Champion in another Rock, has a match with another family member of his, Jey Uso, who is one of the twin sons of Rikishi. So Roman and Jey Uso are being set up for their championship match at Clash of Champions in a couple of weeks. I'm looking forward to that one because Roman is a big douchebag right now. Matt Hardy seems to be okay after his brutal fall at AEW All Out last week. He took the TV last week and basically said he was going to take some time off from TV to heal and recover and then resume his career and close it out the right way. So I'm glad you're okay, Matt. And last week on NXT, Finn Balor won the vacant NXT championship after Karrion Kross vacated a couple weeks ago after tearing his biceps. So Finn Balor, now a two-time champion, now back on top of the mountain. And NXT is also contemplating a move to Tuesdays to get away from AEW, pick up a couple of more viewers. It's been proven now at this point that when AEW and NXT aren't competing head to head, that NXT does markedly better, especially in the demo wars, if you care about that kind of thing. Speaking of AEW, the former WWE Rusev has joined AEW as Miro, which has been his handle on Twitter and Twitch, and his gimmick is the best man. I'm not sure what that means yet, but I guess he'll be kind of like a Mr. Perfect type thing. But whatever. Rusev, Miro, now is All Elite. So congratulations to him. And that is the wrestling news for this week.
Yay.
All right. So that is basically everything we got so far for this week. All right. So in a moment here, we'll get to me versus Mark Leary in our core Legend of Korra debate. That's pretty much it. Next week we'll have Nisha and Mike Cooper come through from Rudin and Melanin to promote and talk about their product, their clothing line. So looking forward to that. I actually have a shirt from them that I think is extremely dope. It's gonna be in my YouTube videos coming up. I want to say next week, so just be on the lookout for that. And yeah. And that's it, Madeline. Tell the people where they can find you.
You can find me now that I'm out of Facebook jail at Madeline Fleming. My whole first name is actually Madeline Carita, but Facebook tried to get me to give them my social security card, and I was like, hell nah. And then they came out that they were selling their information to the Russians. So, my spidey sense told me not to do that. So it's still stuck as Madeline Fleming, and everything else is Queen, Queen. Like the Queen of England. Kong, like King Kong, Kongki, and that's at everything. That's on God, y'all. No, that's at YouTube, Vimeo, Instagram, yeah, everything but Facebook. So find me at Queen Kong Kai. Also check out the Madeline Carita show, and we are on Spotify, Apple Music, cable television, MCN 6, and soon to be on Amazon Prime. And I'm also on the radio doing the same show on KFAI 90.3 FM. I'm trying to think what else. I do a lot of stuff. I got a lot of things going on.
Hey, you wear a lot of hats.
Oh, also quick, I'm on a cover of some romance novels. So, buy some for your girl. Get that WAP cracking with the cover of my book. So that's called Dragon Knights. It's called Dragon Knights. Buy the book, get some WAP, because that's how it happens. Because once you buy my book, it's just gonna happen. It's by Dahlia Rose. I'm trying to think what else. I guess that's all I need to shout out right now. man, the more I'm on this show, the more I feel like I'm about to get you banned. They're gonna ban you off of the airways.
They can't stop me.
They can't stop you. Can't stop. Won't stop. Get
Down, baby. Get down.
down. Can't stop. Won't stop. Yeah. So, as always, I was excited to be on your show. I can't wait to do this again. And I hope whoever's out there listening, keep checking back in.
All right. Well, keep it locked. All right, everybody, welcome back. I'm here with my guest for today, Mr. Mark Leary, photographer, podcaster, Power Rangers fan, and black nerd.
Also, I'm a human being. Let's not forget about that. Human
Of
being.
course. Of course. All right. Shout out to Greendale Community College. But I love Community. But Mark here has a long-standing beef with me, and we mentioned before the break, but I'm ready to have it out. So let's hear it.
All right. So on your YouTube channel, you came out with a video where you ranked the known avatars from worst to great. And you put a certain avatar very high up on the list, and I completely disagree with that. And after I watched that video, we had that very lengthy text argument over her series as a whole, and I definitely want to talk about that. For all of you who don't know, Avatar Korra is the worst avatar we've ever had,
But
for
Roku
so
exists.
many different reasons. I'm sorry, what about Roku?
But Roku exists.
And so does Seto or Zeto, however you pronounce his name. And so does the false avatar Yun. What are you going to do about that?
Well, Yang Chen?
No, not Yang Chen, Yun, the in the shadow of Kyoshi, the dude who the world thought was the Avatar for 2 years, and then Kyoshi came about.
Yeah. Well, he don't count.
He don't count, but I'm a kind of count.
Prophet.
He's the false prophet. Avatar. He's the false Avatar. But it just reminded me of the debates we had back in 6 years ago, YouTube land, when we did Rage Candy on the channel that I can't even think we can name for other reasons. We got into heated debates on the episode breakdowns that we did, and you always defended Korra. You was always on her side. You was always like a fan of the series. At that time when it originally aired, I wasn't on that same page, but after currently rewatching it, you know, the last 3 weeks, I do like the series as a whole. I do think it's a great extension to the Avatar Last Airbender and how they build on the world. I still just think Korra is the worst Avatar ever.
For those who haven't seen the video, you should hop over to JB vs. the World to watch it so you know exactly what we're talking about. But I had Avatar Korra rank in third on the list. I think she did way too. I think she did way too much for her time period. She has a resume. Like, that's a mile long, and she basically did it in, like, 4 years. I still disagree.
7 years, but let's talk about her resume. Let's specifically go down her resume and talk about these things she did or did not do that she's getting credit for accomplishing.
Well,
that's not as big of a deal.
That she's the first Avatar to do that.
That we know of. You can't give her that credit just because she's the first one we've seen do it.
Kyoshi didn't do it. All of them. They weren't doing it. She's the first one that we've known to be fully aware and active, bending multiple elements as a toddler. But she still did it, though. Aang wasn't doing it.
I'm not going to lie. When I do watch that scene, it's the opening scene of episode 1, season 1, where you're introduced to Korra. Toddler, tubby tummy, baby Korra, bending the three elements. Funniest thing I've seen. And I thought I was going to fall in love with Korra.
She's the Avatar. Moment. You got to deal with it.
Right. That's you stole my line. But yeah, I was going to say that. I was literally leading up. I prepared it last night in my mind to bring that up specifically. You suck. But okay, she can bend three of the four elements. But caveat to that, she struggled with airbending and her spiritual side as an Avatar. Even once towards the end of her season, she still wasn't the best airbender. I don't think she ever really mastered it. And she definitely didn't have a real connection with the spirits. But we'll get into that part.
We'll get into that. Right. But that for her to be able to do that as a three-year-old.
Okay. All right. I'll give you a half a point.
That's fairly impressive. Then she mastered three elements by the time she was 17.
I give you water and firebending, because that's kind of what we saw. She was in her, I guess she was in her firebending mastery trial. And I'm assuming since she was a native waterbender, she mastered that element first. But there's no real evidence that she, especially when you get to season 4, that she mastered earthbending.
She did. She said 3 down, 1 to go.
Really? Because she learns metal bending in season 3. Spoiler, it's been out for 6 years, but spoiler, she learns metal bending in season 3.
That's also on the resume. First Avatar to learn metal bending.
Okay, fine. I'll give you that credit too. So did she really master earthbending if then a few years later she then learned how to metal bend, even though she did pick it up on her first try and kind of was kicking A with it the entire time after she did it?
Yeah, there goes.
Fine. All right. You got a full point. She
Thank
did,
you.
She did three elements and she was the first one to master she was the first Avatar to bend metal. So you got a full point. I give you a half a point for each of those.
Well,
what's next?
Then she stopped Mamon and exposed him for being a sham leader of the Equalist faction.
She didn't stop anybody. She exposed him, yes. She exposed him, yes. But it was Tarlok, his brother, that stopped Amon.
All right, so it was a collective effort by everybody involved, but she's the one that took the action.
No, because like anybody who knew that information about Amon, that he was a secret waterbender and using his bending power to be a hypocrite and be the leader of the Equalist movement for non-benders, anybody could have did that. Tarlok could have did it if he wasn't
they
locked
tried
up.
Marco that.
Could have did it.
They tried that. And it didn't work. Remember, because he had the makeup on underneath his mask.
I mean, yeah, he planned for that obviously. And yes, her, Korra and Mako did the little firebending, let's walk on a wall thing. Yeah, kind of cool, but also, like, why wouldn't firebenders doing that from the beginning? But anyway, but yeah, like, they had the fight. She got her earth, fire, and water taken away and unlock airbending, knock him out the window, and he fell in the water and start waterbending. He was exposed. Congratulations, Korra. You did a minor thing.
That was, but
she
a did big...
not. She didn't stop him, though. She exposed him as being a bender, but she did not stop him. And
it
also
undermined the entire movement.
Well, I don't think the movement went away just because he was exposed. I do still...
Imagine Black Lives Matter being led by Rachel Dozier.
With that said, with that same logic, once you expose Rachel Dozier for being a hypocrite, the movement still is going to continue. Those people are still fired up. Just because the leader was taken out doesn't mean non-benders don't feel like they're being oppressed by benders.
I mean, that's
true.
They
just never carried that story forward through the rest of the season. But think about it, like, a movement like that, you're not going to just stop once you cut the head off. It's going to grow another head.
I mean, that's true, but at least it won't be that an extremist in charge. Somebody that was threatened and capable of taking away people's bending.
True, which is something else we can talk about later on, about like the writing of came up with that whole aspect. But you get a half a point because she exposed him, but she did not stop him. Because think of it like this. What if he came back? What if he was like, I'm going to beat Korra? He was a bloodbender who can do it psychically. Who was going to stop him? Who? Bloodbending is already the most broken bending ability.
Korra.
Series. What was Korra gonna do with just airbending?
He ran away, but by the time, like, she got what, Aang came back and gave her her bending back.
That was all after he already been blown up by his brother on the boat.
But it wasn't too long after, is what I'm saying.
I mean, yeah, okay, later that night, but let's just say they never got on that boat and got blown up. If Amon had came back, who is gonna challenge Amon? A psychic bloodbender.
I mean, at that point, he's been exposed. There's really nothing left for him to do. Everything he said, everything he stood for, was based on a lie. That's why he had to flee. There was nothing
true,
left for him to do.
But that still doesn't mean he wasn't the most powerfulest waterbender that exists, because he can psychically bloodbend. If he wanted to, he'd just be like, screw everybody. I'm bloodbending the entire city of Republic City, and you can't do anything about it. Nobody could have stopped Amon at that point if he decided to do that.
I mean, and that's somewhat true, but at the same time, why would he do that when his bid was for control? If you do that, if you go about it any other
control.
Way.
He didn't have to get non-benders to believe in him and believe in this movement. He could have literally bloodbend his way to the top.
But that was the basis of his entire movement.
But on one equality.
That was the basis of his entire movement.
Right, but he didn't really need that movement. If he wanted power, he didn't need a equalist movement to rally up non-benders to do that. He could have just literally bloodbend his way to do whatever he wanted to do, which he did, but he went, and this is the thing about all of Korra's villains that we see in the series, they all four of them had good intentions. They had a good initial idea. Ulalaq wanted the North and the South, Southern Water Tribes to be united. Zaheer wanted everyone to be free. And the Spirits, yeah, you're right. And Kavir wanted to unite the Earth Kingdom. All of those things are noble causes, but they all went about it the wrong way, the opposite extreme of what they, you know, they went far right when they should have went center or a little left, a little right. They went far right. They were fascists or Nazis about how they handled their business.
Agreed. Completely agreed. But at the same time, though, him on the movement that he started was what he based everything on. So him being exposed for being a liar undermines the whole thing. If he goes back, he does something to Korra in that moment, Korra's a martyr.
We'll get to that part. We'll get to that part about Korra being a martyr. End of the day, that even if Korra had three of the elements or if it was just airbending, there was nothing in Korra's arsenal or Team Avatar's arsenal that could have stopped Amon if Amon had went and gotten blown up by his brother and had a change of heart. That's the only reason why he got stopped. He had a change of heart and his brother blew him up. That's the only reason. If it wasn't for that, if Amon had stayed there in Republic City and fought Korra with his waterbending and bloodbending alone – that would have been the end of Cora. Nobody would stop him.
But
whatever
again,
that was.
His whole movement undermined. So he just would have been running amok. But that's not him.
He could have easily disguised himself, went back in hiding, waited a couple of years, and came back out with a different mask and did a different movement.
But that's
or
not
did something different.
But that's a lot of work.
It was already a lot of work to start the first movement. Like, he clearly had been doing this movement for years before Cora came along to Republic City.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, if he has to start all the way over again, it was going to be a couple years effort just to even try to get back. He knew that.
I guess. I can't give you a point for the Cora exposing him thing, because she didn't technically stop him. It was just by luck and chance that
she did what she had to do.
Which was nothing. Was nothing.
She exposed him.
Yeah, she exposed him, but that's... Ooh, he's a liar.
Yes, he's a liar.
Big whoop, he's a liar. But he's still the most powerfulest waterbender that probably ever existed in the series.
Imagine... I'm going to paint a scenario for you. Imagine if, and Lord forgive me for saying this, if Obama turned out to be the opposite of everything he said he was because he got exposed.
I feel like that's what we're doing right now. Not trying to get political, but
it would undermine. It would undermine everything.
Right, it would. However, as a caveat, he would still have been president and could have did something else after he got undermined.
I mean, that's true. But I'm just saying, like, you undermine somebody's entire credibility. Everything they stood on, everything they were talking about goes with it.
Whatever. We're going to have to agree to disagree on this. We're not going to come to a conclusion with Amon, because I'm looking at time. We got to move on to you. We're going to have to agree to disagree about Amon.
Fair enough. All right, so move on to season two. Cora, season two was just bad writing.
I don't blame the writers for season two, because that was definitely when Nickelodeon came out and showed their behind and started doing things. Season one as a whole, I think, is a good season for Cora. You know, Cora came in all wide-eyed and innocent-eyed and realized that she has to step up to her Avatar duties. And I love what they did with pro-bending. A lot of fans hate pro-bending, think it's a hogwash to the whole Avatar series as a whole. I like pro-bending. I like a lot of the things they did in season one. Season two could have been good. They did a lot of things that screwed it up. But I don't blame the writers. They kind of were writing with their hands tied in season two.
Yeah. But it's my least favorite Avatar season in the entire franchise.
I think season two, of course, is the weakest. Even though, and this is another decisive, unpopular opinion, a lot of fans hate the part one, part two beginnings with the story Avatar. Of Avatar 1. Right. I actually like that.
I agree that
it broke the season up and it kind of stopped season two dead in its tracks, because leading up to that, you had all the Civil War stuff, which was interesting. See, the first part of season one is good. And then you get beginnings part one and two, which is its own thing by itself. And then you get the rest of season two, and the rest of season two is terrible.
Yeah, I could have done without Kaiju Cora.
That's what I want to get to as far as one of her negative things. Kaiju Cora, Kaiju Uduvatu, nobody asked for that. Granted,
nobody
that's cool
that.
That that's something that spirits and your inner self can do, but nobody asked for that.
Exactly. And
spirit laser beam chest beams and all this and that, nobody
and
asked
Genora
for that.
Ex Machina.
Let's talk about that. Let's specifically talk about Genora Ex Machina. I don't have a problem that airbenders, like higher level airbenders, they're more spiritual. So it makes sense that their higher level airbending techniques would involve them doing spiritual things, even though it has nothing to do with air. And I feel like anybody that's deeply rooted in the Avatar world, that's deeply connected to spirits, can do some Genora-like stuff. You don't have to be an airbender to do that. And this is where I kind of do fault the writers. They could have explored that a little bit more deeper, because it just felt like her spirit abilities came out of nowhere when you had
out of nowhere.
Right. Sorry. But with the opposite of that, you had Tenzin, who is supposed to be Mr. Spiritual, literally taken from the line. No spiritual connection whatsoever. Spirits don't even look at him.
I'm good with that, because it set Tenzin on a different path.
I agree with that, but that's going to go more into a little bit later about Tenzin's arc. By the way, Tenzin is hands down my favorite character in The Legend of Korra.
Oh, Bulletproof Tenzin is a boss.
Yeah, but we'll talk more about Tenzin when we talk about season 3. I got some specific notes for that. also, with season 2, you find out a lot about Aang as a parent. And even though he's everybody's favorite avatar or a lot of people's favorite avatar, he's not everybody's favorite parent.
And that, I feel like, people see, I'm okay with that. And I'm okay,
with that too.
Like, people complain about, like, characters like that all the time, that they're their heroes and they find their trash parents, kind of like Naruto or Princess Leia and Han Solo. Like, and then you find out later on down the line that they weren't the greatest parents or they weren't the greatest people. And I say to that, so what? Just because you did something great doesn't mean you're going to be great for the rest of your life and great at everything.
I agree. I agree.
There are people. The fact that Aang wasn't a great parent and he showed favoritism, that makes total sense.
It does. It makes total sense because he was the last airbender in his series. He had to be the parent of whatever next airbender came, and he kept having kids until he got an airbender. And once he got an airbender, he stopped having kids. I feel like if Tenzin was born a waterbender or was born normal like Bumi, they would have had 12 kids like the prophet foretold back in season 1. they would have had 12 kids, but he got his airbender and he treated his airbender son because he had to pass on all the knowledge of the culture.
Imagine being by yourself for your entire for most of your life and all of a sudden you're not anymore.
Yeah, I get that.
That makes perfect sense.
Right, I would show favoritism in that sense too. I'm an airbender and I'm the last airbender and I'm the avatar and I have an airbender's child. No offense to my non-bending / future airbending son and my waterbending daughter, but F y'all, let me go with the one that's actually airbending right now. Like, Aang didn't know Boomer would get airbending. Let's talk about that in season 3. But yeah, I mean, Tenzin was the only other airbender outside of Aang. For X amount of years, they only had Aang and Tenzin as airbenders. Imagine the story alone, that could be a season by itself of Aang and Tenzin going around the world being airbenders, Aang teaching Tenzin how to be an airbender and teaching him about the culture of the air nomads. That sounds like, and you know Aang, even as an adult, was silly and kind of goofy and blah, blah, blah. Yes, he was an avatar, but he's still the same old Aang that came out the iceberg so many years ago and just wanted to have fun. I can imagine him and Tenzin just going around the world and having fun and Tenzin realizing that all this pressure is being put on him to be this, to be Aang basically. And in season, you know, in season 2, he had to find out that he had to be his own self. He is Tenzin, as he said in the Spirit Bog. But let's move on. Let's talk about some of these other things. We completely went on a tangent. We're talking about Gamora.
All right, so Korra, season 2. Like it or not, Harmonic Convergence brought the spirits back, opened the spirit portals, brought the spirit back, brought back the airbenders as a result of it, and she basically beat Unavatu, the spiritual incarnation of basically the devil.
You get a point for her defeating Unavatu with the spirit thing, even though, personal opinion, I feel like if he was the Dark Avatar, obviously he's going to be reincarnated, even though I don't know how that would work because he never went around learning other elements and things like that, which I think would be cool. But you destroyed the spirit, or you, with how they explain everything in Beginnings Part 1 and 2, light can't destroy darkness and darkness can't destroy light. Jinora came out of nowhere with that Ex Machina Rava spirit energy, whatever, and Korra was able to somehow get all the strength and energy after getting her A whooped. She was definitely getting whooped by Unavatu in Republic City Bay until Jinora showed up. And then Jinora was like, hey, here's the beacon of light. Ex Machina, go do what you gotta do, Korra. And there you go. She gets a point for beating Unavatu as herself without her avatar spirit. But season 2 as a whole, like you said, is the worst season. The writing's all over the place. Stuff happens for no reason whatsoever. And then you just get so much stuff you ask for. Out of all seven seasons of Avatar and Korra, season two of Korra is the worst.
Absolutely. And let's move on to season three.
All right. So since you brought up that she brought back the Airbenders, Harmonic Convergence brought back the Airbenders. Yes, she opened the spirit portals, but even if she hadn't opened the spirit portals, Harmonic Convergence was going to happen regardless.
It was her actions during Harmonic Convergence, though.
Was it? I feel like rather she had opened the spirit portals or not, Airbenders would have came back because of Harmonic Convergence alone.
I feel like that's it had to do with the portals being open, which she did.
No, I mean, but I guess my claim, what I'm trying to make, wouldn't make sense because without the portals being open, would we still have got that energy shift where the planet was blue and then it turned purple? And then she was like, oh, I can feel the energy of the Earth and all this, and it's different. Things is different now.
I feel like the door was closed. I feel like if the portals weren't open, the door would have been closed to that.
But we don't know. We honestly don't know if
she was credited with it.
She was credited with opening the portals, but we don't know if that would have happened whether the portals were open or not, though. That's all I'm saying.
She brought back the spirits and the airbenders.
She just opened the portals. You're giving her too much credit.
But who else could?
I mean, yeah, she's the Avatar, obviously, and only the Avatar could do that, but all she did was open the portals, and she was manipulated to open the portals. Let's not forget that part, because otherwise those portals would have been open.
And she elected in the aftermath to keep it open.
True, but who's to say? We really don't know. We need more information from the creators and writers to kind of make that argument, rather they would have.
She literally said she was keeping it open.
Yeah, she said she was keeping it open, but we don't know if her keeping the portals open was what brought back Airbenders, or was it the energy shift, or was it another Ex Machina? It's really another Ex Machina. Man. Just lazy writing why the Airbenders came back, because other than that, you just had five Airbenders. About season three and four. But I do not credit Korra for bringing back the Airbenders. I credit Harmonic Convergence doing that.
She did that. Whatever. Anyways, season three.
We'll let the fans debate.
Season three. Season three, I thought Korra was at her absolute best. She was chilling as an Avatar. She was doing her job. She tried to negotiate with the Spirit Vines to clear out Republic City, and then she got booted. And then she devoted her time in season three to rebuilding the Air Nomad Nation. She helped free the Airbenders from the Earth Queen.
She also got used by the Earth Queen to do the Earth Queen's dirty bidding and collect the Earth Queen money.
She also toppled the Red Lotus, and she saved the Avatar cycle.
Okay. Ooh, we gotta go back to season two. We gotta go back to season two right quick. I'm sorry. We forgot the most important part of season two.
Okay.
Her getting her Avatar spirit ripped out of her and losing her connection to her past lives.
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
That was definitely pretty bad. And that was why I credit her alone, just because of that action and seeing all the past lives just disappear before your eyes makes her the worst Avatar, because she's the last Avatar technically and the first Avatar. But like that action alone of her getting her Avatar spirit, yeah, okay, Uta Vatu had her kind of beaten up and tied up, and then Vatu's spirit came out of Ulok's mouth and went into Korra's mouth, which was some weird erotic stuff for Nickelodeon to do, by the way.
Super weird from your uncle.
But seeing Aang and Kyoshi and Roku and Yang Chen and Korrig and all the other Avatars just disappear in front of your eyes broke my effing heart. And I cried. Yeah. I'm a grown man and I cried. I was so heartbroken at that. And even though she got Rava back, she's like, oh, I don't have the connection to my past lives anymore. And I'm like, you stupid MF-er. Like, what did you do? You could have did so many different things wrong. And it just brought up my whole big issue with Korra as a whole throughout all four seasons is she makes the wrong decisions all the time.
I see, and I can't go there because she was in a fight, and in the fight with the ultimate evil, that was the consequence of what happened. And even after that happened, she had to dig deep to come out and pull out a dub.
Which she didn't. Jenora came out and pulled out a dub.
I mean, Jenora Ex Machina, that was a thing, but she still didn't quit. She still was in the fight, and she still tried. And she was still the Avatar.
No, no. She got the Avatar spirit ripped out of her and she lost the connection to all her past lives, all she could do was water bend and spirit water bend and be her true self and all that BS.
She could do it all.
No, I specifically remember. I do not remember her bending any of the other elements outside of water once Rava was ripped out of her until Rava got back in her.
When she went to the Tree of Time, that was energy bending. That was spirit bending.
I give you that. I do give you that. But she also had a huge boost with it being harmonic convergence and with it being the Tree of Time. She got boosted from those things to do those things.
But she still did it.
She did. But she wasn't the Avatar at that point. She was not the Avatar. She couldn't go into the Avatar state because she didn't have the Avatar spirit. You can't be the Avatar if you don't have the Avatar spirit. I'm sorry.
Listen, you go to a Tree of Time, you turn to a giant kaiju, you take out the incarnate of evil.
All that does is show me that in the world of Avatar, anybody could do that. You don't have to be the Avatar to do that. And there's enough. No, I disagree with that because even in Aang's series, the Lion Turtle said in the time before the Avatar, we bent the energies within ourselves, which lets me kind of understand and think that
we as in Lion Turtles, not people.
I did a little extra digging, and I think they really meant people, like everybody, both the Lion Turtles and the animals and human beings bent the energy within themselves.
Man, we have to agree disagree on that one because we're running out of time here.
We barely talked about season three. All right, let me just kind of some specific things in season three. Jenora yet again saved the day with Ex Machina power. Korra did not defeat Zaheer.
She did.
No, she got lucky. She got lucky and got the chain around his leg while Jenora and the other airbenders did the giant vortex thing that sucked him down.
She did that.
All Korra did, because Korra was getting her A whooped that whole time by Zaheer and him flying and going back and forth and all that stuff. She was poisoned. It was Jenora who was like, hey, there hasn't been this many airbenders in this long amount of time. Everybody form a circle. Let's make a giant vortex sucking tornado. And let's capture Zaheer, who's flying around like a mosquito. And he went in and he grabbed Korra and he was trying to get out. And Korra woke up and like somehow metal bend the platinum chain around his leg because you can't physically do something like that. That's not physically possible, but whatever. And then body slammed him to the ground. And then the earthbenders, Lin and Su Yin, came in and was like, hey, let's just get him right now. And then Bolin put a sock in it. Korra only body slams Zaheer. Other than that, she was getting her butt whooped by Zaheer.
Let's be absolutely clear about Korra in season three. Nobody wanted, from season three to season four, nobody straight up wanted smoke with Korra.
Well,
Korra at her best, nobody wanted smoke with her.
Kavira. Season four, Kavira blatantly said it. You can use the Avatar state, you can bend all the elements, whatever. Let's go at it right now. And they did. Kavira whooped that A.
She still wasn't at her best during that first fight.
Right, but I'm just trying to contradict your point you just made that between season three and four, nobody wanted to mess with Korra.
And
that's not true.
I said at her best, nobody wanted to smoke with Korra.
Well, technically throughout season three, she won her best because she still had to overcome certain things. She was still very arrogant in the beginning of season three. She was still very kind of season one kind of core, which I don't mind. And yet she does grow.
Season three. What are you talking about? The dude that was an airbender. My favorite core moment was in season three when dude was found out he was an airbender. He was threatening to jump and commit suicide. Korra didn't force him down like she would have at the beginning. She went up there and she talked to him. And she calmed him down. She reassured him and then got him to join the Air Nation and offered her help in teaching and developing his airbending abilities. That is my favorite Korra scene in the entire series, because that shows not only her growth, but her willingness to help people.
All right, I can give you that. However, my favorite Korra moment is in season four when she wasn't in that episode at all. Barely in this one particular episode that had nothing to do with her. That was my favorite Korra moment. We'll get to it in season four, but you know what episode I'm talking about. But anyway, there's some other things in season three we got to talk about. Jenora, Ex Machina, and somehow beat Zaheer with the other airbenders. I don't give Korra that credit for beating Zaheer. It was a team effort. Another thing that needs to definitely be pointed out in season three. Go ahead.
Korra surrendered herself to allow the airbenders to live. That's what opened herself up to get poisoned, and that's what started that whole thing.
Again, Korra making bad decisions.
She sacrificed herself.
That wasn't the best decision. Nobody told you to do that. There was other things they could have did. None of the plans they came up with would have worked. But this definitely didn't work because it was clearly a trap.
She sacrificed herself for a whole culture, for an entire people. Isn't that what she's supposed to do?
I mean, yeah, but at the same time, that still wasn't the best decision or the best option she had. That wasn't her best play.
It absolutely was the best play.
No, I don't think that was the best play.
She had no choice.
She thought she had no choice. She should have known that whole Airbenders in the Northern Temple thing where Mako and Bolin went to go save them was a trap. She should have known that from Rip because of who she's dealing with.
But the thing is, Zaheer to that point had been mostly honest.
Well, I think Zaheer was honest throughout the entire series. But this goes back to like season two Korra with how easily manipulated she was. I feel like Zaheer in his own way manipulated Korra. Well, he blatantly said it in the ultimatum, which is what I was going to get to. We were talking about the ultimatum, which is my favorite episode of Legend of Korra and Avatar put together because of the best fight scene ever. I'm sorry, it's hands down Zaheer versus Tenzin, best fight scene ever.
That wasn't even a fight. That Tenzin was just taking turns just tagging on him.
right. And the only reason why Tenzin went down was because he went up against all four members of the Red Lotus at one time where he landed and then got hit by ice and earth and air, and then they just beat him. They just beat him like he just somebody on the street and didn't care. But that whole scene where they all there to know the air temple, and Zaheer's like, what are you going to do? You're just airbenders. And Tenzin's like, I'm finna fight you. And just like, and just was like showing what a true master airbender could do. Don't get me wrong, Zaheer, he just randomly got airbending from Harmonic Convergence, and he was a master martial artist and all that, so it kind of fit well with him, and he studied airbending, or not airbending, but the Air Nomad culture, so he was very familiar with it. And he used his airbending abilities to enhance his own natural abilities versus what other airbenders do is to evade and avoid and do all that thing. But hands down, Zaheer versus Tenzin, best fight in all of the entire series, both Aang and Korra, hands down.
I can't agree with that. Really? But that's another topic for another day.
All right.
To my point, though, was Korra had to surrender herself to Zaheer to allow an entire people to live. And that's how she ended up poisoned. That's how she ended up in that situation. And she was still doing what she could against Zaheer despite several handicaps. Chained, poisoned, grief-stricken, trying to stay alive. The Avatar cycle literally trying to die out on her.
I get that, but also look at that fight after she got broke free from the chains and she basically knocked Gazan and the waterbender lady out and just went on and started chasing Zaheer. All she could do was just keep up with him at that point. She wasn't going to stop him. All she could do was do her best to keep up with him.
But she was trying.
Other airbenders. Yeah, she was trying. And the more she tried, the worse it was for her.
And if Zaheer didn't have the ability to fly, it would have been donezo for him.
Yeah, okay, I can give you that. Maybe he could have got her glider. Also, Korsha broke her ankles when she did that one landing when she fell hundreds of feet from the top of the mountain. But I guess she didn't break her ankles. I just wanted to say that because it was so weird. I'm like, how do you fall so far and you land on your ankles and you just good and you just roll over on your back? Also, season 3 has this very weird animation after she gets broken free from the chains and she starts earthbending in the cave and earthbends those giant pillars of earth. That was a very weird animation. It looks very terrible. I just wanted to point that out just as an artist. That looks very bad.
She's the avatar. You got to deal with it.
I get that, but that doesn't make her a good avatar.
It may not make her like the best avatar, but I always felt like I do feel like she ended up in that situation because she did a noble deed, and that's points to her.
Yeah, she was noble, but just because you did a noble deed doesn't mean it was a good or smart deed you did
it was the
or
only
good thing.
Choice. At that time, it was the only choice there was to make. It's either let Tenzin and every airbender friend that you have, that you know, die, or you surrender yourself and just know that the avatar cycle will be, you'll be reincarnated if something were to happen to you, worst case scenario, to your knowledge at the time.
With that said, and I just want to point this out about Zaheer, do you think Zaheer was really going to kill all the airbenders? Because he even told all the airbenders all he wants is Korra. All he wants is to take out the world leaders. He wants everybody else to be free.
Nah, I don't think there's a... I think that he would have if the opportunity, like, if he had to. If he was in a position where he would have been pressed to kill all the airbenders, he would have. But I don't think that would have been his first thing to do.
I personally think he was just doing all that as a political trap for Korra, which worked in his favor because she fell for the trap. I don't think he was really going to kill all the airbenders because he himself is now an airbender and is very inclusive in the air nomad culture and knows that the world went hundreds of 100 years without airbenders. I don't think he would have just killed them off, even if Korra didn't do what she did and came to him. I think he would have just been like, all right, I'm going to figure something else out to get Korra. I'm not going to wipe out all these airbenders because they're not a part of my plan. My plan is to end Korra. So let me go to the next plan B to go get Korra versus killing all 15 or 20 of the air nomads that's here. Even though I'm sure there were other airbenders around the world because there was plenty of people in the beginning of season 3 that was like, nah, we ain't finna go do that airbending stuff with y'all and be nomads and cut our heads off, our hair off and stuff. They stayed in Earth Kingdom. Also, I feel like if earthbenders were or airbenders emerged in the Earth Kingdom, they also should emerge in fire in both water nations. So there should be plenty more other airbenders around the world that we just don't know about.
I mean, that's still, but that's life still.
You right, know, that's life still.
You can't, you just can't be like, well, you can kill these, but I guarantee you there's more out there. Ha ha, sucker. No.
Right.
That's not a thing. And you got to give her credit for that because I mean, she did what she was. I still feel like she did what she had to do.
Yeah, she did what she had to do, but I felt like she had at least one or two other plays she could have did before she had to do that. Just personally. But now, we can move on to season 4 and talk about
3 years
another
later.
Thing. Yeah, crippled. 3 years later, Korra crippled. Alone. With Korra crippled. Now, I will say Korra fighting PTSD and dealing with her past villains in season 4 was good. I don't like how they, at the end of the series, tried to relate Korra and Kavira as being one and the same, that Kavira is just a darker version of Korra. Because we already had that with, I guess, Udalak and Uduvatu, if you want to call it that.
Now, I wouldn't say that they try to create that parallel. Then again,
they did, because after at the end in the finale when she opened the spirit portal, the first thing you see is blue core and purple core, and then purple core turns into Kavira.
I mean, that might have been, I mean, so that's light to me. That's a light thing. What I do like about Korra and her character at the end of that was she didn't try to fight Kavira in the spirit world. She talked to her. And she explained to her why she was wrong. And Kavira actually took the time to listen and surrendered herself. Korra didn't continue fighting, and she very well could have. She could have killed her.
Yeah, she could have killed her.
But that's
but I don't think that's what Korra did that stopped Kavira. I think because you can, like, I know it's just a cartoon, but you can look at the facial expressions on Kavira when Korra's bending the spirit beam and created the spirit portal that they got knocked into to go into the spirit world. I think
that's a point for Korra, by the way.
Huh?
That's a point for Korra, by the way.
Yeah. I was going to give Korra a point for that. She created a third spirit portal in Public City. That's kind of badass. Sorry for my language, but that's super badass right there. But I think it was the action of that, the fact that Korra herself didn't even know that she could do that, and Kavira sat there and saw her, and Korra saved Kavira's life when Korra could have just dodged. And Kavira would just be gone and a big crater in the ground. But Korra saved Kavira's life, and that action of compassion and raw power convinced Kavira that she's never going to be a match for Korra at her best.
Yeah, and that's what I said earlier. Nobody wanted smoke with Korra at her best season 3, season 4. Nobody wanted it. They barely wanted it in season 1 and 2.
She was going to challenge all the time. I remember the Cheatboxers in season 1 definitely handing Korra her behind to her and presenting it on the silver platter after she got she got Cheatboxed.
Yeah, barely in season 1. Barely.
But I'll give season 4 that credit. That one point, she opened the spirit portal, created a third portal. Really cool. Also, how they ended.
She definitely had to deal with the PTSD, and she in season 4 finally did what every other Avatar did before her, which she never had an opportunity to do, and that was travel the world and find herself. Every other Avatar before her got to travel and they got to experience things and went on a journey of self-discovery. Korra finally did that in season 4.
I agree with you with that. The only issue I have with that is I wanted to see more of that. Matter of fact, I think my biggest gripe about Korra's series, all 4 of her seasons, is it wasn't enough. I was watching and kept wanting more. I wanted more character development with Mako and Bolin. I wanted more interactions with Korra and Asami to get that, how they ended the series, to kind of play off better.
Yeah, the only characters, I'm not a fan of Korra.
Really? I am.
It is nothing to do with LGBT relationships. I have nothing against that. I just felt like that was kind of force-fed.
I agree with you there. That relationship wasn't earned, but yeah, I do like the Brian Michael Nick Williams trying to go for it.
In the Brian Michael explanation that I was looking at it through a hetero lens, I think that's BS, because there was really not much there to substantiate me believing that those two were in a relationship, that there's even anything romantic.
Look at it like this. So throughout season 4, they do kind of show more interactions between Korra and Asami. Remember, in the beginning of season 4, when she was still at the South Pole, Korra only wrote back to Asami.
Yeah.
Even though she wrote everybody's letter, she only wrote back to Asami. When she got back to Republic City, Asami and Korra were driving around in the car just laughing, talking S about Mako, and just cool.
I mean, yeah, but I mean, that's still not enough for me to be like, man, that's romantic.
No, it's not enough. You're right, it's not enough. But they were trying to use that to sow those seeds to tell that story, and it wasn't enough. So I'm agreeing with you there, but they were trying to lay something down to do that, and it just didn't work out because they only had 13 episodes to do it, and one of them was a stupid, bad animated filler episode.
Yeah, that's true. Stupid Nick budget. But you're right about that. I would have appreciated more leading up to that relationship other than it, to in my opinion, is kind of coming out of nowhere.
And to that, you just got to fault Nickelodeon because they pigeonholed the writers and the creators, especially in season four, because season four was all online. They completely took it off air, and it was delayed from what I remember. So they had to go, and they cut two episodes out, one or two episodes out, so, and replaced it with a filler episode. So I don't blame the story itself. I blame the creators and the writers for that part. Another issue I have with season four, and also I'm just going to say this, season three and season four of Legend of Korra is the best two seasons of Korra. You get Zaheer and Kavira, the fight between Korra and Kavira was really good, and she was dealing with the PTSD, and Kavira was like, come on, bring on the Avatar State, bring on all four elements, go get your mama and them. Go get your sister and your cousins. I don't care. I don't care. Bring them on. And the only reason why Kavira backed down was because Toph showed up, which told me that Kavira hands down respects Toph as being the original OG metal bender and all this and that. And Toph was like, oh, you give metal benders a bad name. She felt disappointment. Like when your mama tell you, oh, I'm just disappointed in you. That's what Toph and that Kavira moment was like for me. Toph told Kavira she was disappointed in Kavira. And Kavira felt that in her soul, and she didn't do anything.
I felt like she wasn't even concerned. I felt like she wasn't even concerned like that. She was just kind of like, yeah, okay.
No, I think it was a sign of respect because Toph showed up and saved the day. I think that was generally a sign of respect, not discernment, but a sign of respect. Like, okay, no. Toph showed up to save everybody. Because other than that, she was beating Su Yin. Lin and all the other Earth Metal Benders were kind of struggling with, you know, Kavira's army. And Korra was dealing with the PTSD and the little bits of poison still in her. So Kavira easily could have did whatever. Even when Toph showed up, Kavira could have did whatever. But she didn't. She stopped. She let
and
them
that's
go.
Also, and that's also assuming that she even knew that was Toph in the first place.
No, she – come on, you – come on.
Nobody knew where that was Toph living in a swamp for how many number of years?
Ain't nobody seen it. But Kavira came from the Metal Clan. She was there with Su Yin as basically an adopted child. She shouldn't know who Toph is.
After
there's no way. There's no way Kavira did not know who Toph was.
Either way, I'm not crediting Kavira with like having respect for Toph for not making the move. I think she just kind of cut her losses at that moment because like, oh, well, you're getting away, but I still won. I still have Zafu. I still got the Platinum Gundam. I can do whatever I want. I can do what you let.
We don't know she had the Platinum Gundam yet. And that brings up another question I was about to ask you. They build up that she's going for Zafu. And yeah, they got away with Lin and everybody on one of the flying bisons and Toph and all that stuff. But did she go in just like, all right, I got Zafu now? Like, they never really established that she took control of Zafu. They just moved on to the swamp scene and then moved on to Republic City.
Now she did, because they used the platinum from Zafu.
That's right. She did say destroy. She did say take down the domes and all that stuff. You're right. You're right. My bad. But since we brought the giant 25-story Gundam, let's talk about that. When I initially hit you up that night and we had that long text conversation, you said, oh, she destroyed the giant Gundam. And I'm like, no, I think Mako destroyed the giant Gundam. She just had a battle with Kavira in the head of the Gundam.
You know what? And you know what? To you, I say on air, I stand corrected. You are absolutely right. Mako is the one that is responsible for the Gundam blowing up. He should have died in that explosion.
He definitely should have died in that explosion, and I think that would have made season four better. Not because I hate Mako.
A little bit better.
Yeah, it would have made it better.
I don't to do at that point.
Right, it was nothing for him to do. The love triangle thing was probably the worst part of the entire series to me between her, Corey, and Mako. But Mako sacrificing himself to blow up the Gundam, and he died. That would have been good, even though Asami's dad just did the same thing a few minutes before all that for them to get into there to do all that. But yeah, you credited Korra for doing that. I was like, nah, Korra had nothing to do with that. Shit, you're Michael. Right. I mean, Bolin gets more credit for bringing down the Gundam than Korra, dude.
But she had a couple of dope moments when it came to facing down the Gundam a couple of times.
Yeah, when she did the giant pillar of ice from the river, that was really impressive. I don't understand how all those people survived when it blew up. Like, I didn't get that part. I feel like they would have been blown away, even if they were airbenders. Well, I don't know. It's a cartoon. Let me not super nitpick about it. And it was something else. I feel like the airbenders going around being the global police in season four really goes against air nomad traditions.
Nothing.
Like, all right, think of it like this. So, you know the air nomads, right? They free and we're going to travel the world and just do us. And then Tenzin's decision, since Korra needs to go find herself and become the Avatar again, we're going to go around and police the world and just help people. I feel like that really goes against what air nomads really are.
I think that the airbenders, I like the change of pace. I thought it was a little bit different.
It was different, but I also feel like season three is the best season. Season four is the second best only because of the actions that happened. But there was a lot of season four, especially in the middle, where it kind of died. Like, you got the Korra Alone episode. That kind of took me out of what was the overarching goal of season four a little bit. Not because it was the whole episode about Korra, but like in beginnings, part one and two in season two, it was just like, hey, you got a little momentum going and now you just stop it to tell this isolated story and then we're going to pick it back up on the next episode. And then we're going to have that really, really badly animated, low budget recap story. Like the Ember Island Players, which is probably one of the best episodes of that season. But yeah, I feel like season four had pacing issues. But getting back to Korra, I actually give Korra points for having to go through PTSD and dealing with that struggle and having to metal bend the rest of the poison out of her and meeting Toph, then having that encounter with Toph. By the way, love Toph. Absolutely love Toph. Toph is a static character in both series. She's the same when she's introduced, and she's the same when she's 86 and beating Korra. Just absolutely hands down love Toph.
There's some growth there. It's subtle growth, but it's still growth.
The growth she did, like, I love, obviously, Toph in season two and three of The Last Airbender, hands down best character, most amazing thing, created metal bending, and then her cameos in season four. And she's still earthbending and being just witty and clever and comebacky as she's always been with any of the other avatars she's with Aang. I feel like it was a nice homage to find out she's alive and she's like, hey, I'm just disconnecting myself from the world. So, but going back to her growth, yeah, she grew to become the chief of police for Republic City. I feel like that's not in her character to do that, but I get personally, but I just feel like that part between when she's young and when she's old, her middle life was kind of didn't fit with what we actually see of Toph in action. So, yeah, but it also makes sense. She did start a metal bending school in Wuhan or whatever in the Promise comics and taught metal benders how to metal bend. And then she goes on to teach other people how to metal bend, and then creates a police force, a military force, basically. I feel like that whole thing is against who Toph really is as a character. But from when she's first introduced and from when you last see her, it's straight up the same Toph that you see. The only difference in the Toph that we get is in all the flashbacks in season one and three of them dealing with her being chief of police. And I feel like that's just out of Toph's character. And I like Bolin in season two better when he was doing the movers thing. Any other point? Or season one, season two of Bolin is my favorite. Season three and four of Bolin, not so much.
Season two of Bolin was definitely him at his most interesting. I definitely will agree with that. But we're about right out of time right here. We're definitely going to have to make a part two out of this. We're going to have to make this two-parter to kind of get all this in there, because this is a lot, bro.
Oh, yeah. We there's so much other stuff we just, like, had to go over or skim over. But, yeah, you're right. And I kind of want to go watch this Wakanda tribute to Dragon Con. I'm missing it. But this was great. Oh, my God. I think every episode I'm going to be on is going to be a very long episode.
Thank you for coming on. Definitely going to have you back, because there is so much more to cover here.
Definitely so much more to cover. You don't mind that since we're ending the show, I can plug my social media stuff. So if people want to find me and all
that, I was going to ask you to do that anyway. Go ahead. Where can people find you?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, JB. You can find me on my website. My website is just Mark Leary, Mark with a C, LEARY.com, where you can see my vast portfolio over the last few years, all my cosplay and regular photography stuff. You can also find me on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter at Mark Leary Photo, MARCLEARY Photo, PHOTO. And I'm always there. Just if you want to hit me up, just let me know. We can get into other geek debates. I definitely want to get into a debate with you about certain anime stuff, because I didn't know Full Metal Alchemist was your favorite anime. That's definitely one of my top tier animes, so we can get into that too.
I would love to do that. All right, so thank you for coming on once again. Definitely have to have you back for a number of different episodes. I see this is going to be the start of a thing between you and me on this show.
Do the thing, JB. Do the thing.
But thank you for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me and going down this long rant I've been building up for years.
And we're going to get it all out of there eventually. All right. Thanks for coming.
All right. Thanks.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's the whole show. I know it was a long one, but I'd thank my beautiful co-host, Madeline Carita, for joining me for the new segment, and my guest, Mark Leary, for joining me for a second time on the show. Crap. All right, trying that again. 45 seconds. No, I'm not. 35 seconds. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's the whole show. I know it was a long one, but I have to thank my beautiful co-host, Madeline Carita, for joining me, along with my guest host, Mark Leary, for joining me for a second time. Now, if you want to find me on the interwebs, you can find me on Instagram and Facebook at JB versus the World. You can also search me on YouTube at JB versus the World. And you can find me on Twitter at JBVTheWorld, because Versus was just too long for Twitter. Thank you for joining us on JB Versus the Podcast. Look forward to next week. We'll have Nisha and Mike Cooper coming through for representing Rooted in Melanin to talk about their clothing line. Check out for their promos on my YouTube videos this week. Take care of yourselves and each other. Ya Bombay! You guys take care. JB out.